Welcome to the Public Works Nerds Podcast.
Welcome to the Public Works Nerds Podcast, a public works podcast of the nerds, by the nerds, and for the nerds. I'm your host, Mark Culver. Thank you for joining us. Today, I finally get to nerd out about pavements. I've teased this topic a few times on some other episodes where we started talking about seal coats and overlays and some stuff like that, but I have yet to dedicate an episode to this topic until today. So today, we're joined by Chris Evers, the technical representative with Pavement Technology Incorporated. So, and Chris, is it Pavement Technology? You guys don't call yourselves like PaveTech, right? It's Pavement Technology.
We call it, PTI, short it up a little bit. PaveTech is in the, PaveTech Inc. is the email address. So, we'll go by anything. As long as somebody's saying our name, it's a good day.
Absolutely. And before we get into Pavement Technology and what they do and the innovative products that they offer, we're going to talk to Chris about Chris, because Chris is very worthy of talking about. Chris and I found each other through my goal of interviewing the APWA 2023 Top 10 Public Works Leaders, and Chris is one of those awarded and recognized leaders. You're only my second interview so far of those top 10, but I'm working on getting the other ones. So hopefully we'll hear more in the near future of that. But you are one of the few recognized leaders in the private sector, Chris. So let's meet Chris. Let's find out why he was honored with this award and get to know him a little better. So welcome, Chris. Great to finally sit down and chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. It sounded almost like a Frost from Stuart Smalley interview and Jack Handy, kind of all in there for the folks my era, the Saturday Night Live, which used to love those. So, but yeah, this is great. Thanks for having me, and it is a great honor of mine too, because I've been following the nerds and the podcast since you guys kind of got kicked off, and it's exciting time. So, thanks for having me. I'm really just. Glad to be in this space. It's kind of not something that I ever anticipated. I graduated from Oklahoma State University in the Midwest, and I really didn't know anything about public works. I definitely did the same thing everybody else does, which is take it for granted. And in essence, started in the private sector. I've never been on the public sector, but my entire, career in public works has been about serving the folks in the public sector, whether that be DOTs, cities, counties, even engineering firms. I get involved with a lot of engineering firms and even, airports, FAA, Federal Highway Administration. So kind of all over the board, really.
Yeah, that's interesting. The airports, I had a little bit of stint in my very, very early career where I was doing airport design. And when I was in college, it was the Top Gun era. I thought I was going to get out and design and maintain airports. And so I took some pavement classes with that in mind, but that's a whole nother conversation, is just airport pavements, because those are massive.
Definitely. They are. They're no joke. And the thing people don't realize is they're very wide too. I mean, some of them could be 150, 200 feet wide by a couple miles long. So those, they're massive. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah. And a lot of issues with obviously maintaining that pavement, but then runoff and what are you doing with the water and everything else going on. So,
yeah, they don't have a very big tolerance for potholes, let's say. So there's some things that are unacceptable, thankfully, for us folks who fly. So you definitely have to maintain those pavements. Pavement preservation is critical to them, as it should be for everyone. And that's really where I've spent my career is both, talking about pavement preservation, advocating for it, but really trying to explain why we should do our best to preserve these assets instead of just letting them deteriorate, instead of really deploying like a worse first strategy.
Yeah, no, well said. And we'll get more into that here in a couple of minutes. But first, talk about your APWA involvement and how you got to the point where, hey, you are a top 10 leader, but, start with how you got involved.
Sure. I remember sitting in an office. The gentleman's name is Cheech DeSellis. And Cheech is great. He's actually a legendary public works leader. He's since passed, but he was the public works director down in a town in South Florida called Plantation. And I sat in his office, and in his office, he had all these awards on the back, you know, that I was staring at when I was meeting him for the first time. And he, you know, could see me, you know, looking at him. And he said, yeah, I'm very involved in the American Public Works Association. Are you familiar with them? And I said, and I was familiar with them from my Texas days, but I had no reason to join back then, really. It wasn't really my primary focus. I was more DOT centric. And so he said, I highly suggest getting involved with APWA. So I took him, you know, to be a pretty serious guy about it. So as soon as I left his office and got back to my abode, I basically joined and, you know, then started to get involved at the branch level in Tampa. And then in essence, you know, really started to get into a situation where I started to get these leadership positions basically with the branch and then with the chapter. And really by about 2012, I was elected president of the Florida chapter. And before then, I'd been involved in a lot of the different rotations in some of the committee chairs and that kind of thing. And then at that time in 2012, we have a pretty large chapter expo. And so it was one of those things where it was like, we need to bring something different. So we really kind of came up with something called the Public Works Director Roundtable. And that really was kind of a genesis of some of my involvement up at the national level, where we took that eventually in 2014. So it's been a lot of fun. We just wrapped up one last week. The week before. And it's just a great opportunity to get, you know, the directors around a table. It's not always been a round table. There's been kind of some funny stories where we've shown up at PWX and there somebody didn't get the memo and no one's sitting at round tables. It's the classroom style. So as public works do, Mark, we improvise. And so right. Everybody just pushed the table out of the way and arranged themselves in a round table. So it was great. So, but it's fun. It's been a lot of you know, fun. It's been very rewarding. And it's one of those things where, you know, I cherish it. It's been great. And it's, I'm sure, what led to that top 10 nomination from the Florida chapter and ultimately in receiving really what I consider the greatest honor of my career. So.
Yeah, no, and it's kudos to you for that and for that, the recognition. Kind of curious about the roundtable for setup and the format. You know, is it just, hey, everybody shows up and you just kind of go around the table talking about stuff? Or is there a couple of particular topics that you have lined up and then you go into a round robin type of situation? Or like, what's the format of those for those that might be thinking of doing it where they are?
Oh, I would love for them to either join us at PWX or, of course, certainly reach out and we can give you the full roadmap to bring it to your chapter as well. I think all the chapters would be great to do it. But in essence, the real kind of strategy there is that what we want to do is we have a table full of networked kind of public works directors. And those directors then are basically there to, you know, interact with each other. So we'll give them a topic. And then once we've given them that topic, then, and we can do a few brief slides. And then when we kind of turn them loose, then they kind of tear into the topics and meander through it. And then we try to bring them back into the fold. And then we'll go kind of round robin to each table. And they'll basically pick a spokesperson. And that spokesperson will then, you know, basically give the group, the whole group, the ins and outs of what they discussed. And so it's really exciting. I've had a lot of directors say, you know, it is the highlight of whether it's their PWX or even their, you know, experience at the Florida Chapter Expo. It's why they come, is to be able to interact with each other. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. I've, you know, often get into conversations with people about, you know, professional organizations and that, and, you know, really the, yeah, there's some great conferences and you get some great technical sessions and things like that. But really the value I see in an APWA and some other organizations locally is making those connections and just talking to, you know, with your colleagues about their experiences and just building off of each other on your experiences, good and bad, you know?
Definitely. And it's really about their challenges. So the challenges they face in Florida, we have obviously a pretty robust discussion, you know, as we roll into hurricane season. Yeah. It's something that we were talking about offline just a second ago. And so we face some severe challenges and tribulations when storms, you know, occur in Florida. And so, and we really try to help each other. There's been some really exciting things where, you know, we've all kind of banded together and brought different, you know, positive things out of these storms, whether it's learning how to respond in a more, you know, effective way, or even to help our brethren when they are, you know, impacted by hurricanes, which we've done, you know, several times. And so that's one of those things where, you know, we say it's where directors go to grow. That's kind of our tagline, if you will. And yeah. So I think the biggest thing is it's also where directors go to connect. And so they can help each other. So oftentimes that's ends up what is happening. And it's not reliant on myself or any of the other moderators. It's been just about those directors saying, hey, you know, give me a call. It's almost like a social network for public works directors, if you will.
Yep. Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let me talk a little bit about, you know, and you said it was a great honor and everything, but the top 10 Public Works Leader Award itself, like how did you find out and, you know, how, maybe what the process was,
sure.
And what does that mean to you? I mean, what does it mean to you, the award itself?
It really, I mean, it's hard to really put into words. I think for me, it's the culmination of the way I live my life. It's a service first mentality. So, you know, I think if you talk to people, you know, that I've, you know, been able to interact with, a lot of times they'll just say, yeah, we really don't know. A lot of times there's no clear path to connect what he's doing to his job, what we assume his job to be. But I don't ever look at my job as just what I do for pavement technology. It's really about how I can help. So whether that's helping when somebody's impacted by a storm or whether that's helping, you know, in the aftermath, I got a call from, actually it's the gentleman who just received word himself that he's a top 10 recipient, Keith Bryant from Bay County. And I remember getting a call from some folks up in Panama City area, and they had gotten into a battle with FEMA. And they said, will you serve as our pavement expert? And I, you know, said, well, I'm humbled that you would think of me as an expert, and I think I could help. But it's really not what I do. I'm not like an expert witness or anything. And they said, we're really in a pinch here. It's going to cost Panama City $10 million. And they're saying that everything we did, that we didn't do any, pavement maintenance or preventive maintenance. And I knew for a fact that they had, because right. We had done a project for them literally maybe 3 months before Hurricane Michael, which was Category 5 storm. So I said, well, hell, I can send you, I have a video that aired on, NBC affiliate there of us spray applying, Rejuvenator on your roads. It's that, there's your proof. And they laughed and they're like, yeah, I know that's kind of why we're calling. We think you might be able to help us. And I said, well, what does it require? You know, it could be maybe a 25-page expert report with, the potential to serve as a witness and the 3-panel appeals court by Zoom, at least. They did say by Zoom.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, great. So I just, I said, okay, I'll do it. And they said, they meaning their consultant, who was their attorney, said, what are your hourly rates for this? And I said, I really don't have any hourly rates. So I guess you're going to get it for $0. It's free.
Wow.
Today. Day only. It's free. So anyway, I just tried to put in some extra effort and jockeyed around my schedule, and it worked out. And I have a really amazing employer. Colin Durante is always very supportive of APWA. He's himself like a lifetime achievement guy here in the Florida chapter. And so he said, if you can think you can help him, help him by all means. So It happened, and we went in there, and long story short, we ended up, I was a witness, and it was a strange experience getting cross-examined by the FEMA attorney, and they ended up winning. So, you know, I ended up, lost about $3 million, but saved about $7 million. And it was just, to me, like that recognition that I can do these kinds of things and that I can use, you know, what I've learned over my career to help, even though to them, there's no reason, like there's no monetization of what I'm doing. It's just, I do it because I'm passionate about public works. And so I think there's a recognition that I'm that kind of guy. And so I'm assuming that that's one of the primary factors in, you know, getting nominated. So it's been exciting. And there has been a lot of, you know, different accolades that come my way, but I don't ever nominate myself, you know, for any of that kind of stuff. That said, for those folks who might get tapped to do the top 10, obviously no one knows you better than yourself. So it is a little bit of heavy lift where you have to organize some of the materials and explain what you've done over your, you know, entire career. So I won't say that they just pick it up and run with it and, you know, can fill 20 pages or anything. You do have to help them. So.
No, I've heard that from a couple other people as well. And it's a little awkward, I suppose, if you go through that process and don't get selected, you know, if you get nominated. But I think it's still a great honor, whether you ultimately get selected for the national award or not. I think it's still a great honor and recognition that, you know, your local chapter thinks highly enough of you that they want you to, you know, pursue that. That process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And that's part of it. I mean, I was honored. I really wasn't sure if I was going to get it because, as you mentioned before, I'm in the private sector and only about 8 or 9%, I'm told, you know, have won from the private sector. So it's a little bit more rare, I guess, or harder to do. And so, you know, I really didn't have a lot of expectations of whether I would be selected or not, but, you know, just being nominated was huge. And so when I got the call from President Keith Pugh, I had actually called him about something completely unrelated, you know, as a kind of a business call, because we do some work with Withers Ravenel. And he called me back, and it was just happened to be 3 weeks later. And so I kind of spewed on for like probably a good 5 or 10 minutes, you know, different stuff, unrelated. And he was there, and he's like, and I said, hey, anyway, it was great to catch up, like just ready to kind of end the phone call. I had finished. And he was like, well, that's really not the purpose of my call. And I was like, oh, really? And he said, Chris, I don't know if you remember being nominated for top 10, but you're a recipient. You won. And I was like, all right, way to bury the lead and let me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dribble on for, you know, 10 minutes. So, but, you know, everybody who's been in that position will tell you the same thing. It, like, you cannot remove the smile from your face for like the next, you know, day. It just, it was just this incredible feeling. And it was kind of a realization that what you have done has meant something to someone, or to more than one person, hopefully. And so it's a great feeling. It was a lot of fun. And it was, you know, fun to be up on stage with a lot of the top 10 recipients that are amazing people. I've gotten to be friends with many of them, and you're going to get to hopefully interact with them in your journey as well. So
yeah. If I don't catch more of the 2023s, I'm gonna get an early start in the 2024s. So
anything I can do to help, I can put you in contact with at least one of them.
Yep. Appreciate that. Well, thank you for, well, congratulations again on the award. And thank you for your service to the industry, and look forward to maybe crashing one of these public works round tables.
Please come, because as we stated before, we do accept recovering public works directors.
Yes.
You are completely in that, you know, camp, and so even if you've turned to the private sector, we would love to have you. So it's 2024 is in Atlanta, so come on over.
Yep, Hotlanta coming up.
Hotlanta, that's right.
So let's transition to the topic of the day here, and that's pavements and pavement maintenance. And you know, really interested in what pavement technology PTI does and what they offer. you know, in Minnesota here, I would say the vast majority of our roadways are bituminous, particularly local ones. We do get some communities that are using concrete for local roadways, but the vast majority are bituminous. And so we've got our tried and true maintenance techniques and applications like crack sealing and seal coating and, you know, maybe some fog seals or slurry seals and obviously, you know, overlays, milling overlays and such. And then we've just recently got into the use of rejuvenators, which is something you guys offer.
Yes, absolutely.
But we have started seeing some issues with our seal coat, and we can talk a little bit more about that. So we are looking for some more, and I'm sure some of the other listeners all over the United States and around the world, I'm sure, are, you know, interested in some of the more innovative techniques and applications and such. And so maybe talk a little bit about, you know, what PTI is offering, what your products are and how they're different from, you know, some of the traditional applications we're used to seeing out there.
Yes, absolutely, Mark. So really, to kind of take it back a little bit, PTI, pavement technology, came out of the 1970s, kind of during that energy crisis of the 1970s. And it was really that realization that we could do more to preserve pavements. Back in those days, asphalt, we don't even want to talk about what asphalt was, per ton in place.
Single digits.
It was very low. And so, you know, there wasn't a big, you know, push to preserve them, because why would we do that? They're so cheap. We'll just, remove them and replace them. But as oil for the first time kind of went up, then there was a move to rejuvenate the pavements. And so Colin Durante, who I mentioned before, started the company back in 1972. And it was focused around something that was relatively new at the time, asphalt rejuvenation. And specifically, because people kind of throw that word around a lot, specifically called maltine rejuvenation. And so maltines are one of the fractions in the asphalt binder. So it's original to the pavement. And so what happens is those light ends are lost over time. And so as they're lost, then the binder becomes more brittle and will crack, ravel, and cause more and more distresses, especially as water, or in your case, ice and snow penetrate down into that pavement. So really the approach was, let's spray apply this asphalt rejuvenation, and specifically the trade name, and it's still called this, is called Reclamite. Mm-hmm. And you all are using Reclamite in Minnesota, and throughout the upper Midwest and really across the country and world. It's probably it is the most well-known asphalt rejuvenator. And the original, you know, purpose of this was to, you know, soften that asphalt binder and extend the life of the pavement by about 5 years. And so, you know, certainly places like Florida, where we get a lot of sunlight, we get a lot of oxidation. We a lot of times equate it, the analogy that we use is like putting sunscreen on before you go to the beach. And we all know as a kid, you know, mom used to slather us up with sunscreen and then, send us out there. And certainly, you can do it. That's the best way to do it, is to be proactive. And so what we want to do is, while the road is still in relatively good condition, is put on our sunscreen. If you don't listen to your mother and you're being kind of a difficult child, then you'll go out there and first you'll get burnt. And then you'll decide, okay, mom, I give up. Let's put that sunscreen on. Well, at that point, you're looking like a lobster. You're burnt up and it's really too late. So we explain that to folks, and we use this analogies, whether it be changing the oil in your car or sunscreen, you know, a number of these different, you know, kind of analogies. I even use dental care. You know, they say you go to the dentist and he says, hey, what you here for? And he says, well, I want to know, you know, which teeth should I brush? I need a little guidance. And the dentist will say, it's really easy. Brush only the ones you want to keep. And so it's the same exact way with preserving your roads or any asset, is you don't have to preserve them all, only the ones that are important to your agency. Because those are the ones that are going to stick around longer. So that's really how we approach it. And for PTI, we operate across, about 13 different states. And then there's different distributors in areas like Minnesota, like you have a PTI equivalent in the upper Midwest, in CAM. And they do work up in that, you know, area of the country. So,
So the Rejuvenator, the Reclamite product, and I've seen it in some limited applications. I've driven a couple of roads that have had it on there, and it's a very translucent. I mean, it's almost just like pour, it looks like you've just poured oil over the road.
Right. It's like a pink. It's got that pink look to it.
Yeah. So maybe talk about that application process. How long does it take before you can drive on it? And then, you know, maybe a little bit, and then how often do you recommend doing that? And then maybe, you know, just kind of like, I think so many of our listeners that are doing pavement management are probably used to, you know, the chip seal model. How is that different from that? Hey, everyone. I just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, Boltman Mink, who is producing and editing our podcast.
At Boltman Mink, we believe all people should live in a safe, sustainable, and beautiful community. We promise every client two things. We'll work hard for you, and we'll do a good job. We take a personal interest in the work being done around us. And at the end of the day, we're real people offering real solutions.
And that, I love chip seal. I mean, that's where I started my career in the mid-90s, was working for a supplier, and we supplied the, you know, emulsion for chip seal. So chip seal is a fantastic process. This would be higher up on the, what we call the deterioration curve, which you're probably familiar with. Yep. And so, you know, really this is something we're applying to an asphalt pavement, hot mix asphalt or warm mix asphalt pavement in the first year to 3 year to 4 years. And then we're going to reapply that in about 5 years from that first treatment. And so the earlier you catch it in the north is better, because obviously we have that freeze thaw that we don't have to worry about down here, thankfully. And yep. So, you know, in essence, sealing up this road, because it also acts to seal up the road and keep the water intrusion and some of the dangerous things that happen when water freezes. So, and if we can do that, then we're going to have much better luck. If we wait into that later time frame, like let's say year four, year five, you already have a lot of that cracking that's occurred, and it's not going to be as effective. Just like I talked about with the dentist or putting the sunscreen on, it's just not nearly as effective. And so the premise behind it, and you're right, it's translucent. It does not have the asphaltenes, which is the black material in an asphalt. And so because it doesn't have that, we don't have to restripe. So therefore, it's going to cost less. And there's not going to be as much disruption to traffic. Typically, it's going to penetrate in about that first 20 to maybe 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And then we put a light coating of sand and then return it to traffic. And so it's very minimal disruption to the driving public, which is one of the things that people like. Oftentimes, you know, we say in public works, we want to get in, get out, and stay out. And that's exactly the premise of this. If we can extend the life of that pavement, then we don't have to come in, do the chip sealing, mill and resurfacing as frequently. And anything that we put on top of it too, Mark, is going to perform better. So you can imagine if there's less cracking, less raveling than any surface treatment that we put on there, whether that be a chip seal or potentially microsurfacing, is going to perform better because it doesn't have as many of the distresses as if we just left it to its own device.
Do you have agencies that are doing that, doing like a Reclamite pre-treat to a seal coat or something?
Yes. And so we oftentimes kind of call it staged construction or phase construction, but it's not phased in so much as that it's like a month later, it's 5 years later. So the whole premise is to extend the life of that pavement and to really flatten out that deterioration curve. And so really by doing this and by kind of that early intervention in the life of the pavement, we're able to, that means we don't have to chip seal at the same time. We may be able to wait years later and then it's eligible for seal coating, or for instance, for microsurfacing, where we might be able to wait before doing that. And so that's going to extend the life of that pavement. And in the end, it's going to lower the life cycle cost for the agency and the taxpayer.
Yeah. Just a real quick question. I know that some agencies use, I think I've heard it called a Texas chip seal, where they actually do a chip seal on a milled surface and then overlay on top of that. Have you guys done that with the Reclamation product?
We typically wouldn't. I mean, by the time you're doing some of those things, you're beyond kind of that top of the curve preservation.
Yeah.
I would say the most frequent is going to be that plain old good old asphalt pavement that's been placed. We spent the big bucks on it. Maybe we did some milling and resurfacing. And then that after that final lift is down, then we'll spray apply the Reclamite on, and then in essence, let it go and you know, make sure that it's performing well, but check back in with it in year four, year five to look at some retreatment. And typically we can do that two. In Florida, we've done it as many as three and four times before we've selected a different strategy. And then oftentimes that different strategy, because there's not a lot of distresses, that different strategy might be a microsurfacing. And certainly we don't do chip seals as much down here, but for you, then it might be that it's a chip seal and then a micro, which would be more of a cape seal, for instance. So it's all about what we can do to extend the life and in the end, lower the life cycle cost, because it's really just a math equation. We have to make sure we do as much as we can while it's less expensive, because as we all know, these public works, you know, agencies just do not have unlimited funds. They can't. Obviously, they can't print money, and so they can't, in essence, go in there and just wait and deploy worst first. And so that's a realization I think more and more folks are kind of coming to. We're seeing a lot of people, you know, agencies move away from that worst first and deploy a full mix of what we call mix of fixes, where they're using all of these different pavement preservation strategies.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the fact of the matter is whether we plan our pavements to be 20, 30 or 40 year pavements, they're in place in more and more instances. They're going to be in place for 40, 50 plus years before you're really doing a full, you know, reconditioning or reconstruction of that pavement. And so the more you can do to protect that underlying structural portion of that pavement, the better that pavement's going to look in. It's still not going to look great at year 50, but it's going to look a lot better than if you're not doing some of the stuff that we're talking about here.
But. Touche. I mean, I use Reclamite every day when I get up. And I mean, I'm in my late 70s. So,
wow. You don't look a day over 56, man.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm actually 50. So now it's a problem. it's true though. You know, the fact is that, you know, we have this pressure to do something to the pavements, and people are like, sometimes the feeling is, what are you doing to that perfectly good road? And yep. So I think what we as a public works profession end up doing, a lot of times we don't want to be the bearer of bad news, or we don't want to, you know, say something that might be controversial. But oftentimes when I've heard people talk about what the citizen reaction has been when we tell them the reason we're doing something that's perfectly good road is to make sure we can keep it perfectly good for as long as possible. And then we use these analogies, then we get a lot of positive reaction. It's not what I think public works directors or pavement managers expect, that they're going to take a lot of heat for preserving the asset. Most people in their own lives know that if you have a pinhole in you know, leak in your roof, you're probably better off, you know, repairing that prior to the roof falling in and causing you know, flooding inside your house. And so, you know, I think they by nature are going to understand that. It's just that we have to have that you know, reaction to where we'll use some of these everyday analogies to explain, instead of get, you know, to where we feel like we're on the defensive, and especially with elected officials. And I spend some of my time, you know, helping the departments with, you know, getting in front of the elected officials and being not the bad guy, but being the person to explain that in a way that makes some sense.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It's always good to see another tool added to that toolbox for maintaining our roadways. And yeah, regardless of where you are in the U.S. or the world, it's so important just to have a pavement maintenance strategy. You know, whatever you do, whatever you think is best, just do something.
Do something.
Yeah. Right. And hopefully you're doing the right thing, but at least do something. So let's transition a little bit to another very innovative product you guys have. And you've got the polo shirt on, the Plus TI polo shirt there.
The smog frog on. He's ready for action.
But yeah, talk about the smog eating roads. I think, you know, this is really interesting as communities are you know, developing some climate action plans and trying to come up with, you know, actual methods to mitigate or, you know, manage the carbon dioxide coming out of their communities.
Absolutely. It's not only the carbon dioxide, Mark, it's really what we originally focused on when we started developing the product. And, you know, was really the NOx emissions, because the air pollution, the smog, the photochemical smog comes from, you know, nitrogen oxides. And so the CO2 obviously is the predominant emission from the tailpipe. And we think about it a lot, but a lot of the global warming potential, you know, it can be 250, 300 times more potent with these nitrogen oxides or the VOCs or some of these other emittents, even though they're a smaller percentage. And so it really kind of began. I remember we were at a conference, TRB, the Transportation Research Board in DC, and Colin and I were there. And he attended, he said, man the booth, and he attended a session where it was all about photocatalysis. And that'll be kind of the word, podcast word of the day here.
Photocatalysis.
Photocatalysis, it's the nerd word. Only nerds use that word, but it's going to save the world. And we all know nerds save the world in a way. So the fact is that he came back and he said, yeah, you're not going to believe this. There's this photoreactive titanium dioxide that you can apply to a pavement, and all of a sudden the pavement will eat smog. And I was like, that's the darndest thing I've ever heard. What, are you sure? And he said, yeah, there's all kinds of research, and it's been, you know, understood since the 1970s. But the problem is that if you encapsulate it in building materials like concrete or cement or asphalt, then it doesn't work, because the UV radiation really is what activates and creates photocatalysis.
And so it's got to be at the surface.
It's got to be at the surface, and it's got to be whatever you're putting it on with has to be translucent. And you mentioned translucent earlier. We just so happen to have a material that is translucent, and we have, you know, 50 years of experience, you know, introducing translucent material to the pavement. So he and I are kind of standing there, and I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. I wonder if it would work. So flash forward, you know, now it's been, 7 years or so, and PTI's developed this product, and we call it Smog Eating Roads, but it does much more than that. It's generally we call it Plus TI. So it's basically the addition of titanium dioxide to your pavements, whether that be asphalt or concrete. And so what that enables these pavements to do is do some amazing things by harnessing the power of the sun, which is free. Every day the sun comes up, wakes us up, and with its brilliance. And once it does that, these roads basically, you know, kind of become activated by photocatalysis. And the catalyst is this photoreactive titanium dioxide that we embed into the top surface of the pavement. And it is, in essence, able to enable a reaction whereby the emittance from the back of the tailpipe are basically captured and sequestered in the form of carbonates and nitrates, which, you know, if we know from, you know, it's kind of our high school science, those can wash off the pavement harmlessly with rainwater and end up acting as, you know, lack of a better term, plant food. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this reaction and this kind of, discovery has led us on a completely different, journey. And that is to tackle one of the most difficult problems out there in the transportation sector, and that's mobile source air pollution. And so that, you know, through this, you know, process of doing our research and dialing into it, we made some other discoveries about photocatalysis and titanium, one that it reflects this UV radiation. And it basically ends up creating a cool pavement as well. And so because we're, in essence, reflecting back that UV radiation, the pavement, especially that black asphalt pavement, has a higher what's called solar reflectance index. And I don't want to get too sciencey, But in essence, if you can imagine, you know, a black, dark black road absorbs most of the solar, you know, energy and thermal energy from the sun, and it heats up, and then it emits it or re-emits it at night. And that's why we have pavement that's hotter at night. And that heats the entire urban environment as well at night. And so that is the definition of really urban heat island, is the premise that urban environments don't cool off in the evening hours like the, you know, basically nature does. And so that, you know, was a discovery that we made after we were working on it for a while. And then we discovered that, wow, well, photocatalysis also decomposes other things like microplastic pollution. And that's been the most recent discovery, is that, you know, about 85% of the microplastic pollution is actually what we call road area microplastic particles, or ramps. And these ramps, you know, are basically tire wear and brake wear. And so even zero emission vehicles actually have more of these microplastics that are, you know, created because they're typically heavier because of the battery pack being heavier. And so the promise of this is kind of morphed from just looking at mitigating the mobile source air pollution to all the way full circle to dealing with, you know, urban heat and microplastic pollution, and even some of the safety factors with the treatment. So
how is it? Then there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot of nerdy stuff there, which is great. But how does it impact that microplastic? Because it, I guess, as I think about it, I would think that that's, you know, really a consequence of just the friction of the road, and just, you know, like the rubber just kind of wearing off on the roadway. So how is the, you know, the smog eating road, the titanium dioxide, how is that countering that? It's not reducing the friction of the roadway.
So no, in fact, actually, just to spend a second on friction, because that's one of our most frequent questions, is this going to degrade the friction? The other thing that's amazing about photocatalysis and titanium is that it actually also changes what's called the water contact angle of the water drops. So as you get rain, it's able to basically increase the roadway's ability to move the water off of the pavement, for lack of a better term. So if you can imagine, that's actually going to improve our skid resistance. But to your point, you know, tire particles are absolutely a fact that these just tires are on our vehicles. We have hundreds of millions of vehicles and billions of vehicle miles traveled every day. And those, you know, tires are going to bear the brunt of that, and the brakes a little bit too. But the tires obviously are going to wear, and they're very microscopic particles. And these particles then can actually become, you know, what we call non-exhaust emissions, or NEs. And the non-exhaust emissions are particulate that you and I could breathe in, or the you know, proteins that we eat can ingest these. Even sea life, obviously, they find these microplastic particles everywhere. They become airborne and then, you know, are carried by the wind. So the fact that photocatalysis has been shown to, again, decompose and break down things, it's really like an oxidative, you know, we call it a super oxide or super radical. You know, it's these hydroxyl radicals that then attack the bonds that hold things together. It was even used to break down COVID during the pandemic as well. When you introduce UV radiation to the photocatalyst, or in this case, the titanium dioxide, it's going to create this reaction. And it happens, you know, every time the sun comes up. And so once that reaction occurs, it's going to break down anything, organic compounds, mold and mildew, COVID, not that roads are super spreaders, but certainly any surface that has this photocatalyst on it will begin to break down whatever's, you know, resting on the pavement, in a positive way. And so, you know, as we talked about that, at first we were really focused on emissions, but it seems that we've been able to discover other researchers, you know, have found these other, you know, co-benefits, if you will. And the co-benefits are exciting as well. So,
yeah, no, that's super interesting, and I'm, interest in learning some more. I know you've applied this in a road in Edina, and I think that was part of MinRoad's research. And you've done it in some other areas, like I think Tucson is one, right?
Yes. So we've done quite a bit in Arizona for Tucson, Phoenix, Tempe, a small town called Avondale there in the Phoenix area. They are using it, and everyone uses it for different reasons. So they're really primarily focused on heat resilience, and it makes sense. It's the desert. It's extremely hot. I measured a pavement temperature of a black pavement of like 170 degrees when I was out there. That's way too hot. Yeah. And so in essence, this heat also means that their roads deteriorate much faster as well, and also contribute to obviously some dangerous heat, conditions for human health. So there, it's been primarily about extreme heat. Areas like, Cleveland metro area, Cincinnati has been more because that's in a non-attainment area for EPA, same as like the Raleigh, Durham area, Charlotte, North Carolina has been, mainly air quality. I would say Charleston, South Carolina, which actually in 2023 won the Technical Innovation Award at PWX at APWA National. And theirs was kind of multifold. It was both extreme heat resilience in disadvantaged communities, and then also obviously the ability to neutralize the mobile source pollution.
That's really interesting. So, and then are you basically combining the titanium dioxide with your reclamite or rejuvenation product? So you're also getting the life extending qualities of that as well as all the other things?
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head right there. So we actually incorporated in with the maltine-based rejuvenator, the reclamite. We also have products for concrete pavement as well, which obviously does not need the maltines in it. So that's a different product set. And then we can obviously also apply it on, for instance, we have a joint treatment as well that we can apply that. And that's not going to really be as much about mitigating the air pollution at the longitudinal joints. But as we said earlier, titanium is very effective. Its hydrophobic, hydrophilic properties move water away, and we want to move water away from the longitudinal joints and asphalt pavement. And then finally, we can utilize these some of these products on things even like sidewalks, for instance, or tarmacs, ramps, building pads. So anything that there's a concern for any of these, detrimental environmental, issues, we can use photocatalysis to really bring in a solution that prior to this was really not available.
That's interesting. And then, when we talk about the heat island effect and countering that, you're not like changing the color of the pavement. You're not like painting it white, are you?
No, that's actually a great point, because that would be called albedo. And the problem with painting something white is that it, guess what? We drive on it and it becomes dirty. And then we don't have that albedo effect or that reflection of the visible light. And there is cool pavement that's out there. And to be fair, it will reduce the surface temperature. But our approach has been different. We felt like, certainly on the public works side, what public works wants is something that's not going to drastically change the aesthetics, and that's not going to change the, the potential safety or comfort to the driver. Because if you can imagine driving on an all white, bright white, albedo product, there could be some reflection glare off of the pavement. The other thing that we use to measure that is called the wet bulb temperature test. And what's been found is that a lot of these albedo-based products will actually make pedestrians feel even hotter because it's reflecting, the visible light right up in the face. And so the approach that we're taking is more, nuanced. It's more that we're increasing the solar reflectance index, and that is really about just reflecting the UV radiation primarily. And that UV radiation is what really kind of superheats that asphalt and concrete all day and then re-emits it at night. So you won't see as much of a temperature change at the pavement level. But what you will see is that the evening temperatures will be lower, and you can see that through satellite imagery as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So, you know, we've talked a little bit. We talked about the Rejuvenator. We talked about the smog eating road. What do you see on the horizon? Like, what are you guys working on next that you're willing to talk about? That is, or what do you see? You know, just in the industry in general of like kind of the next innovation.
Well, you know, one of the things you may have heard the term environmental product declarations. We're working on that right now. That's a pretty hot topic, and that really is about, you know, being able to take and look at what the effect of your product and the manufacturing and use of your product does to what we would call scope one emissions, or the emissions that are released through the activity that you're currently doing. So if you're building a road, those emissions are charged to the construction of that road versus scope three emissions, which are really what is, you know, after construction, what is occurring, like the use of that road, meaning those vehicles traveling up and down that road. So I think that the next exciting thing, and we're probably just a few months away from this, is I believe what's going to happen is we'll have the potentially the first environmental product declaration that not only is really carbon neutral or negative in the scope one phase, meaning during construction, because we're really capturing emissions really on day one. But the other thing is that we'll be the first to be able to capture these emissions and sequester those scope three emissions. And those scope three emissions are really what causes a lot of our air pollution across the country, is the use of, you know, millions of cars and billions of vehicle miles traveled, VMT. And so that scope three means that we'll be able to take this out there and say, hey, you know, we can actually get this verified and potentially unlock the carbon credit market, to where these pavements are negative, carbon negative infrastructure. And that's something that we're very excited about. So the hard work of developing the processes and the technology will then enable this to kind of tilt into, we're going to turn, or our vision is to turn our infrastructure, our transportation sector, into a carbon and NOx sink instead of the source. So if we could go from source to sink, Mark, that would be a very big deal. And that's something that really gets us excited and kind of gets us up for work.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, you know, in Minnesota, we had some new legislation passed last year, and we're working on tweaking that this year, but it essentially requires MnDOT, Minnesota Department of Transportation, to account for increases in greenhouse gas emissions and VMT. But there's been a lot of conversation, and then mitigate for those increases, and actually mitigate to meet carbon reduction goals. And so I've thought about this, and you know, how this could impact that, and, you know, being able to use this as an offset or a mitigation measure. But how is there a way to measure that on site? Like, you know, once the pavement's in, how are we measuring this as far as actual effectiveness of that product?
Definitely. I mean, there's certainly different ways to do that. There's kind of the original research angle, and that was to prove that this really does work. And so the way that you would do that is you can take a known quantity of either NOx gas or CO2 and introduce it into a chamber. And then, you know, once you turn the light on, which would be the sunlight, then it will measure, you know, with a core in the chamber, it will measure the reduction in these gases. And so that's obviously a kind of a tool that we would use. You wouldn't be able to do that with every single project. So instead, we can use the what's called an XRF. And the XRF is a device this handheld device, and you can either core the pavement and measure the amount of parts per million of titanium dioxide that are at the surface and doing their job. And we can basically use an indexing method to understand if there's, let's say there's 4,000 parts per million on this particular pavement, that will, you know, relate to or basically, you know, be tied to a NOx reduction of 42%, let's say. And so, you know, there's, and the thing that's the real challenge is, The fact is that every day is different on these pavements. There could be different clouds cover, different sunlight amounts, different vehicle ADTs. There can be different wind speeds. So it's really difficult to, you know, say with any certainty, you know, down to, okay, at noon, the reduction was at X percent. But like most things, I mean, there isn't, you typically don't have a real time, you know, measure of something. You know, just look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It seems like they're always adjusting, the unemployment rate, right? And so it takes months for them to kind of figure that out. So what we were able to do is use these acceptable, you know, scientific modeling and methodology to come up with the, you know, approximation of what kind of reduction. And that's going to be based on, to take that back, that's going to be based on the average annual daily traffic. So yeah. AADT of a specific roadway, that's measurable. And we can actually take EPA's guidelines for what a passenger vehicle and a truck generate in emissions. And again, we can, you know, take that and put it into the model and calculate, okay, here's how many tons of CO2 equivalent reduction we're generating. And so, you know, that's really the way to do it, because again, every vehicle is different as well. I mean, you know, you have vehicles that are not emitting any, you know, like a Tesla, right. And you have some that are maybe poorly tuned, and it's a, you know, 1996, you know, Celica. And that thing is a major problem. So, you know, it's that's why we have to do it that way. But that, I think, you know, most of the, you know, environmental stakeholders know that, they understand that it's well accepted. And that's in essence what they're used to doing, you know, to measure emissions anyway. So really looking at the kind of the big picture and the trends.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting and really interesting. The last question I'll have on that is, you know, in order to maintain a certain level of effectiveness, I guess, you know, 80% or 70%, or I don't know what level would be considered ideal as we're trying to use it maybe as a mitigation measure. How often do you need to reapply that titanium oxide treatment?
That's a great question. It kind of takes us back to what we talked about with Reclamite, where we, in essence, are seeing around a 5-year, 6-year, maybe 7-year reapplication schedule. The good thing is we can actually test that using that same strategy or that same methodology that I talked about, where we're going to measure the parts per million on the pavement. And we're going to determine, is it time for, you know, kind of that titanium dioxide booster, if you will. And then we can easily reapply it to the pavement to give it, you know, obviously kind of a little energized, you know, as far as its ability to capture more of the emissions that are occurring. And so that can happen once we see that it's dipped below a kind of predetermined level that we've seen and through our research have determined is kind of the baseline where we want it to stay.
Okay, good. When we talked, we had a little pre-meeting, I talked a little bit about I'm interested in like the major differences in pavement maintenance between northern and southern climates, you know. Sure. I know all about what we do up here in the north, in the bold north, but you know, and obviously you've talked a lot, you know, about how, you know, the pavements in the south with the more direct sunlight and more sunlight exposure are breaking down quicker. They're losing those maltings faster. But so what in your experience, what are the major differences in how agencies maintain their pavements between the north and the south?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, I grew up in Kansas, and so we had, you know, winter weather. And I think the thing that's challenging there is you introduce, you know, completely different, you know, issues there, like the snowplow, which we don't have down here, obviously.
Right,
so
right.
The fact is that those speed up the roads as well. And mm-hmm. So we have to look at different strategies. And so I know we were talking about chip seals. And so a lot of what we do down here, you know, really wouldn't be the best approach up there. I mean, and same thing down here. We have an expectation from all the tourists and everything else They don't want chip seals. They see those as rough, and they want to be out there, you know, rollerblading and enjoying the outside, and expect kind of a higher level of service for what they're getting. And so, you know, I think for what you see up there, it's really about that season of addressing these pavements. You know, the best time is really in that fall as you go into, you know, winter. And I know you already do this, meaning the north. Yeah. It really cannot be overstated, though, is to, you know, take care of those cracks, make sure you're using crack sealing. Everyone really should be deploying a pavement strategy that is including these top of the curve things like asphalt rejuvenation, like crack sealing, chip sealing, you know, any of the things that we can do to keep the moisture out of the pavement. And that's really critical. It's more important than it is down here. It's still important down here, but we actually can cheat a little bit and defer those treatments, you know, deeper into the life of our pavements, whereas it's more critical for the northern climates to really be proactive. And so, you know, there's kind of that approach that, you know, are we being corrective or proactive? And then there's the final, which is predictive. And, you know, it's not like you guys are surprised every year when the weather changes. So predictive would be the best approach. Proactive is at least, hey, I noticed it's getting a little cool out. Let's run out there and crack seal some roads. Well, we actually already know through some, you know, fancy things like the Farmer's Almanac that, you know, around September, October is a good time to go out and crack seal every year. So yeah. Being predictive, using some of these pavement management tools, that's another thing we didn't talk as much about, you know, but the correct nerd approach is to really understand and diagnose the problems with the pavements through pavement management, understand the health of the patient. And that's always a better approach than just the shotgun approach where, you know, we don't really know what's wrong with this road. Let's just put something on it. It's really about that, you know, right treatment on the right road at the right time. And so that is really kind of getting full circle and being, you know, I would say the most responsible, not falling into that worst first. I know the phones ring with the potholes. Yeah. And we still have to address the potholes. Obviously, that's a safety issue, but we also know what causes them. And so if we can go in there, rejuvenate the pavements, if we can go in there and crack seal, you know, chip seal some of these things at the right time and use that predictive modeling and that pavement management, you know, approaches, then we're just going to be a lot better off, whether it's up north or down south, frankly.
Yeah. 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 I think we've come a long way in the last 20, 30 years, at least here in Minnesota and other areas that I've had conversations with people about, you know, developing that pavement management program, going out and measuring your PCIs and documenting that. And, you know, you mentioned the curves before, you know, and looking at those curves and, you know, recognizing that this kind of treatment here is going to bump the curve up and give us a little extra life and just, you know, having that developed program that you need to maintain over a long period of time, you know, not just, oh, well, we got to go fix that road because it's got some potholes in it.
Well, and the AI is there to really, as we get more advanced, it's becoming not only less expensive and less mm-hmm. intensive, but it's enabling, you know, higher frequency of measuring, you know, our pavement's conditions. And so I think that's really putting the best intel in the hands of the people who have to make those decisions about our pavements. And so I think that's going to be a trend moving forward is more and more, you know, data and using this data to correctly determine the exact perfect time to, you know, apply that right treatment. So pretty cool.
Yeah, you, this is a great segue to one of the questions that I had on our sheet today. And that is, how are you seeing technology and pavement maintenance make a real big difference? And AI was one of those bullet points that I had on there. And I feel like we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and like everything that we do everywhere, not just public works, but everything everywhere. So you kind of touched on it, and you know, obviously we've seen some, you know, AI applications where, you know, people are taking video of street segments and then, you know, rolling it through and coming up, identifying the cracks and distresses in that and coming up with a PCI. But where else are you maybe seeing AI in this industry, or maybe even within PTI being applied, or where do you see it maybe being applied?
I think, the realization, I did a presentation for the last Public Works Expo where I had ChatGPT. It was pretty new. ChatGPT was new. And I said, what if I just let ChatGPT, large language model, put together my presentation? And so I did that, and it was really funny. It was called the Pavement Avengers, and it came up with like a superhero based, kind of thing. And it even had like the pavement multiverse, to where it had the, and you'll get a big kick out of this. You know what it identified as the evil, kind of the evil baddie in this story? It was the Corruptus Maximus. That was the name of the evil politician that was stealing money from the Public Works Department and misallocating these funds. So I think the funny part, and we make jokes about it, but what AI is doing is enabling, a person using AI to outperform what that same person would have been able to accomplish by himself or herself. Yeah. And so, it's not that you can necessarily say, AI is doing just this. It will drive our distributor trucks eventually. It will, handle a lot of the traffic control with maybe with a Tesla robot, Optimus or whatever his name is. So, it's that we're going to take people out of dangerous situations and enable us to focus on some of the higher value, activities. And, I think it's this week is National Highway Safety Week. And so, I think a lot about how many, people in this industry are killed every year by accidents. And I just wonder, it's thousands. And yeah. I just wonder, is that, whether it's AI, robotics, whatever you want to call it, is that also going to mean that more of our Public Works brethren come home at night? And so that's a big thing. I think that's one of the exciting aspects of it. It's not just about identifying a distress faster and more effectively, but it's about not putting people in harm's way and doing something, smarter, not harder. And so I don't think you'll be able to, in 5 years, you won't be able to find an aspect of Public Works that's not, I would say, significantly impacted by some sort of AI robotics, to that extent. It's going to be almost irrecognizable, I believe.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think the only thing that's going to slow that down, because you mentioned it earlier, AI is clearly dependent on data. It needs data to help make those decisions, to help, analyze the situation and such. And so how are we collecting that data? Where are we storing that data? How are we managing it? Those are the things that we need to come to grips with as a public works industry. Where are we putting sensors? How are we, how are we deploying this stuff so we can collect that data and ultimately do better things with it? So,
definitely. But, yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I was watching Terminator with my son. He's a teenager. He's older now, and I remember him seeing Terminator, at the end of the first movie. Yeah. And he's like, wow, that is really low tech. And I'm like, jeez, that's where we're at right now. Is it's the Terminator, the T-100 or whatever it was, is low tech. So, I mean, if we're here in 5 years to talk about it, I guess we've done something right. But it is, in a way, it's both exciting and scary all at the same time.
It really is. It really is. But more exciting, I think, at this point. I mean, you brought up Terminator, so obviously we're all worried about Skynet at some point. But there's a lot of good that can happen before we get to Skynet, yeah, too.
Definitely touche.
Well, great. Anything else you wanna talk about, or
I mean, we've covered a lot of ground. We've gone full circle, I feel like. I'm trying to think of what kind of a story it would be appropriate to end on. I think the biggest thing that I would say, as we carry on and do what we both do and what the audience does is I think the best part about this profession is that you know, when we go to these events, it feels like a family reunion. It feels like when you go to enough of these, and that's what it's always felt like, you know, as I got into this, because I never really imagined myself being in, you know, public works profession. But you show up and you greet friends and you hear about what's going on in their life, and you hear about you know, what exciting things is going on in their work, you know, profession, and all of the different things. You're just left with how lucky we are to be in something that not only is extremely impactful for society and for, you know, the well-being of the country, but also it's really, you know, one of those things where you take with you the relationships that you build through that mission that we're all on, which is to, you know, help the you know, common good with the infrastructure improvements that we make and the safety aspects of what we do. And it's just, you know, I take from it just the gratitude of being able to you know, get up every day and do something that I think makes a difference, not just, you know, selling a widget or, you know, going punching the card. It really feels like we're accomplishing something, especially when you see projects that are completed and you walk away with that achievement where you say, wow, you know, there's a lot of people that have no idea what we did here. And that's pretty cool. You know, they're oblivious to it, but they wouldn't be able to do what they do unless we did it. So that's really, and it's times like watching the bridge collapse, unfortunately, you know, where you think about it and just how big an impact not having some of this infrastructure, you know, can be, regardless of, obviously it's a tragedy with the loss of life and all that. But if you just boil it down to, you know, some of this major infrastructure, what life would be like without it is, you know, pretty bad. So.
Yeah, no, well said. And you touched a lot of points there as far as, you know, leaning on each other within the industry, you know, building that network, the family reunion, you know, at the conferences and things like that. And it really is very rewarding from that perspective, as far as the people that you meet, but obviously the work that we're doing as well. And I've quoted this many, many times. If you listen to a couple of my episodes, you're bound to have heard it at some point, and that's We Make Normal Happen. And one of the public works directors up here in Minnesota, I have to quote him or credit him with this every time I say it, but Mark Ray out of Burnsville, that's public works. We make normal happen. You said it, you know, if we're doing our job and we're doing these really great things and we're so proud of them and we see the innovation and we're excited about it, the public just sees another road and it's just working for them. And that's great. That's great. Because when that road's not there, that's when it's not normal anymore. And that's boom. We're in the spotlight for the wrong reasons.
Oh yeah. So, we don't want that. We like to stay under the radar and yep. we're as a humble group, and it's very rewarding. So it's been fun hanging out with you and going through and definitely nerding out, you know, it's fun to get a chance to, you know, go through some of these things, and it's something that I'm passionate about. So it's easy to do. Time just flies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Clearly. And you're absolutely right. It amazes me how quickly these episodes go, but yeah, love your passion. Love nerding out with you. Look forward to seeing you in person at PWX, hopefully. And we can nerd out some more on some payment management stuff. So
let's do it for sure.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Mark.
All right. One last thing before we go. If you have enjoyed this episode of the podcast in general, you ask that you help us spread the word. LinkedIn, we have a minor presence on Instagram and X and such, but help us spread the word. Tell your colleagues about it. We'll keep delivering some great content and episodes for you if you guys keep listening. So thank you again. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tony. Absolutely. Nerds out.
Yep. See you, Mark.